If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is a Wednesday afternoon, and you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. The sun will come out tomorrow. Actually, that's not true. The sun will not come out tomorrow, but the sun will come out eventually. We're in the midst of our April showers, I guess. Hey, let's start with Terry Savage from terrysavage.com and the Huffington Post and WGN TV and the Business Lunch, just about everywhere else. Terry, welcome to the Business Lunch today.
Interesting day, isn't it?
It is an interesting day. And, you know, it's been an interesting week. So I want to back up and start a little bit with Monday when the Treasury Department announced these new rules against inversions. And President Obama then on Tuesday came out, made a statement very much in favor of that. And then last night, you tell me, but the announcement was, I believe, that this big inversion of Pfizer and Allergan in Dublin, it has fallen through.
Well, you know, let me put it on a personal finance basis, which is what I tend to do. Everybody out there is finally thinking about filing your tax return. I mean, it's just like a little bit of time ahead. And every single one of us is looking through whether you use, TurboTax or you have a tax advisor to go, okay, is there anything else I can deduct? Is there anything else? What can I do? Should I do something for next year? It's too late this year. How can I pay less in taxes? It's a national pastime to figure out, and you'd be silly if you didn't take the appropriate deductions
sure,
for your real
absolutely.
Estate taxes, your property taxes. Well, corporations do the same thing. They're in job in business to make money for their shareholders. And we have some very strange, I won't get into all the depth of them, tax laws in this country. They're very punitive tax laws compared to the rest of the world. And so a popular technique in the last 3 or 4 years is for a company that has a lot of tax profits to buy a foreign company, a rival, merge with them, and then move the company's address overseas because that sharply lowers their U.S. taxes. And so that's a basic part of it. And now the Treasury is saying, it's just like if they, you know, yelled at you, wait a minute, too many of you are taking charitable deductions. We're going to pass a law that you can't have charitable deductions or real estate deductions. It's the government going after where the money is. What would make more sense is to make America the most attractive place for capital, for companies to bring their profits that they've legitimately earned overseas, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, where they then reinvest overseas, to make it easier for them to bring profits home and less burdensome for them to pay taxes in the United States so that they could be the acquirers and bring jobs and businesses here. But that's not the way it's been working, and so we have these efforts to move profits and therefore taxes offshore.
Well, one argument I heard was an executive, I'm told, went to senators in one of these fights a little while ago and said, well, Senator, do you take a tax exemption for the interest you pay on your mortgage? You know, and the senator says yes, and the business leader said, well, that's what I'm doing too. I'm following existing law to keep my tax bill as low as I can.
And exactly what I was saying.
Yeah, and I'm all for that, you know, but I would also like to see some laws changed maybe so that that isn't so attractive and that they're not able to do that. Anyway, it seems like
rules, instead of keeping them from doing that, why don't we change our tax laws to make America's tax rates so attractive that businesses want to locate here instead of leaving here?
Can we do both?
That's the answer. That's the way you get economic growth.
Can we do both?
Well, let me ask you. If you outlaw, charitable deductions is a bad one because Americans are really charitable at heart. But if you outlawed the real estate mortgage tax deduction, do you think it would impact the housing market? Of course. So if you want to make laws against something, you better be aware not only of the incidence of the tax, but the burden of the tax.
Well, let's talk. I want to talk personal finance, but you brought up filing your taxes. It's what we're doing now. And what's your opinion of those software programs? I mean, I'm a big TurboTax guy, but what's your opinion of those software programs that will help you figure out your deductions, like what you've donated, the value of them, and things like that?
Well, there are strict
rules. I mean, I haven't written about this year, but there are strict rules for deductions you can claim and the value of them and, in fact, the amount of support you have to sustain that deduction. So whether you're deducting clothes that you gave to a charitable thing or a car or a boat when it gets to, or artwork or so forth, do I think TurboTax is great? I know it's great. I know that it is. I mean, it's not a commercial for TurboTax.
No.
There's several tax cuts or several other tax preparations.
Well, you know, I guess I'm talking about there's one that they sell in conjunction. I can't think of the name of it. It's called It's Deductible or something like that. I only ask because I've used it a couple times and I put in items that I've donated and the value that they suggest for me to deduct seems so high that it scares me. I never deduct the value they suggest. I always reduce it.
The one thing that all honest people do as it comes to tax time is say, wait a minute, is it worth it? Yes. Is it worth it to take a deduction that's going to pique the IRS's interest? A lot, you know, they've done studies. Your possibility for being audited depends on your tax bracket. But there are some things that the IRS flags, the home office deduction being one of them, and you want to be very, very careful to stick by established rules. So the point is, you could probably get away with a lot if you weren't audited, but do you want to take that chance? Nobody sleeps well thinking that they've done something that might expose themselves to an audit, which is not only back taxes, but penalties and interest.
All right, let's talk to today's news then. Thomas Perez, the Secretary of Labor, just spoke. Kim Gordon had some of the sound in the news at noon. And we've been talking about these changes in regulations, this fiduciary rule, for a few months. But the federal government announced it in a conference call last night, formally today. And it will change the way our financial advisors have to advise us in some ways, right? Explain it for me.
Well, I've been writing about this and been part of something called the Fiduciary Committee for, it must be about 7 or 8 years now. There are two, up until now, there have been two ways people could get advice. Those who said they are fiduciaries always, and registered investment advisors and fee-only financial planners, were always considered fiduciaries in that, number one, they put their clients' interests ahead of their own, and number two, fully disclosed all fees, commissions, prizes, or anything else they got from recommending a product. Brokers who work on commission, and I was one, so I have nothing against brokers. I'm not sure you can legislate morality in this case. But the fact is that brokers were held to a different standard, only that it was a suitable investment. So let's take a typical retiree, and the broker says, you know, we should put 25% of your money in bonds because that would be suitable. So here's XYZ bond fund. The broker doesn't have to say that instead of XYZ bond fund, which charges maybe 5% in fee to get into it or ongoing annual fees of 1%, there could be an ABC low-cost bond fund with the same kind of bonds that has no commission to get into and very low annual management fees. As long as the bond fund is suitable, brokers did not have to until now tell exactly what the commissions are and be required to put the client's interest, i.e. getting a low-cost investment, ahead of their own.
So the broker could say this type of fund is suitable for you and then have a choice of three and choose the one to which she or he gets the most money out of, not the one that...
That's the way it's worked forever.
Right, right.
Forever and ever.
Now that will change.
Consumers don't know. Well, it won't change for everything. This is really interesting. The SEC didn't get around to making this rule. The Department of Labor created this rule. And because there's $10 trillion in retirement accounts, a huge amount of which being rolled over every year as people retire into IRAs and people going, oh, well, let us help you decide how to invest your IRA. This applies to investment advice given to retirement plans, which the Department of Labor under ERISA supervises. So you don't have quite the same protections if it's just your money that you invested over the years in a personal account. But the real target now is this rich trillions of dollars that are being rolled out of many 401k plans,
right,
and into IRAs looking for advice. The baby boomers are now looking for advice. And now because it's IRA money, they will get better advice. It will cost the industry a lot more. They'll change their way of doing things, but it'll probably save, according to the Department of Labor, $30 billion for consumers in their retirement accounts.
You write about home equity loans, and we're going to take a break. I want to talk about that when we come back. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I didn't mean to say smarter, Terry. I meant to say more comfortable. I'm much more comfortable.
You're so comfortable.
I said that well, that was a stupid thing to say. Okay.
Everybody can walk down Michigan Avenue and look in the window and see you being comfortable.
Oh, they are comfy, too. Okay. I want to get to the home equity loans, but this robo-advisor sort of fear or warning or possibility
these new warning.
Loans. Okay, explain them for me then.
No. Don't confuse the word robo. It's not like the robo calls you get from candidates for me.
Aren't the financial companies worried about it?
Why? They're the cutting edge of investment advice. Now, listen, if you're rolling out, you're 67 or something like that, you're retiring and you've got $1.2 million in your retirement account, you want some sophisticated, individualized financial advice. But for young people to pay a lot of money for financial advice, just like they're Uberizing everything, investment advice has hit that level. And I've written, go to terrysavage.com and search the archives. I started writing about companies like Wealthfront and Betterment a couple of years ago. In fact, I made Betterment one of my top five financial apps at year end last year. You can see that article. These take the costs and the uncertainties and the ripoffs out of investment advice. And you open an account, could be an IRA account, and you fill out a series of questions, and they give you a choice of portfolios, or they will make the choice for you based on your answers. What would be best for you? You know, Steve, we all know that over the long run, what matters most is that you keep investing regularly, that it's a diversified portfolio, you don't go off to extremes. That can be done by computer. Robo-advisors do that, and they're the hot new thing. So, as I said, Betterment, Wealthfront, there are a bunch of them that are the next generation is using. And I think that's great because that way people will be encouraged to build up enough money so that when they get into pre-retirement planning, they'll have enough wealth accumulated that they could use a financial advisor. It scares the brokerage firms, though, that's for sure. The combination of these new fiduciary rules, which means they won't be able to reap big commissions, they'll have to probably charge fees. That may cost some investors more, they say, but basically I think it'll be good for investors, but it'll be costly for financial services firms, this new fiduciary rule. And the competition from robo-advisors also is costly for them. So we're seeing a whole new wave in the financial services industry of making investment advice available and transparent. And I think it's going to help people a lot.
All right, Terry, I've done a bad job of managing our time today, but I want to talk to you about your column at terrysavage.com about home equity loans and lines of credit. We're hearing a lot about that. Again, home values are increasing, and looks like a no-brainer, right?
It's not. And how can we possibly not have learned our lesson from the last time around? What stimulated this column, it's in the top at terrysavage.com, is a big Wall Street Journal article. You know, the Wall Street Journal tends to reflect the viewpoint of the street. And the street is, hey, wow, in 2015, lenders extended $156 billion in home equity lines of credit, the largest dollar amount since the housing bust started in 2007. And the average line was a record $119,790. In other words, there's low interest rates. Banks aren't making money on a lot of things. They're certainly not making money, you know, on loans. But what they are going to tee themselves up is to make money on home equity loans again. And please, everybody, the whole column is, hey, let's remember the lessons of the past. Let me just hit you with two or three key points. First, the low interest rates on home equity, it's a line of credit until you take it down. Then it's a loan. Okay, so if you want to have a backup line of credit, that's all right, but it's so tempting to use it. And the rates are so low, but number one, those rates are variable. If interest rates go up again, you will be hit. Number two, you're making small payments because they're probably having you only pay interest when you use the loan. And then it'll be a 5 or 10 year balloon. Who knows what rates will be if you'll be able to refinance then, if you'll have a good job. You're putting your house on the line. So the column is basically a warning. Tempting home equity lines of credit. Oh, good. It'll be there if I need it. Beware. It's like a credit card. They tell you you got $5,000 line of credit. People just go out and spend it up. Then you're in trouble.
I'd say go read all of the details. It's at terrysavage.com. Terry, we are going to part ways for a week, right? I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm going to be on vacation next week, but I will be back right after that.
Well, you've earned it. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks.
You bet. Terry Savage, you're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. By the way, a little bit later in the program, we're going to talk to Mike Lenz, the founder of this new app, Tip Yourself. Maybe you've seen it. It's been prominent on the App Store for iTunes. Anyway, Wintrust Bank plays into that, and we'll talk to Mike about that a little bit later. But first, coincidence, by the way. That's not why we're having him on. I didn't realize it until today. Scott Kleinberg is here, writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. And so some of the things I was telling you off the air, some of the things you write about, I have to, you know, read a couple times to grasp. And it has nothing to do with your writing. It's like, but can this be or what's going on? And one of them is this new contact lens that serves as a camera.
Yes.
Samsung, right?
Yes. So it's almost like if you think of what Google Glass was, you know, was because they've changed it so much, this is actually a contact lens that you will be able to wear that will show a screen in front of your eyes, very much like wearing glasses, but the contact lens version.
Okay. So I was thinking that you were going to be like infiltrating groups and, you know, people back home could be watching what you're watching through the eyes.
Well, it's certainly possible that something like that could happen.
Right.
That could be part of it. I think what this is more of, you know, where you can take a picture with your eye.
So it's something you can really
you can get a screen
yourself,
in front of
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, what you say makes perfect sense that that could happen eventually. It's like, why not have a vacation in Hawaii while you're standing? It's certainly possible.
And would you do that, Scott, while you and I are talking? Would you like disappear to Tahiti or something if you could?
If I could and you'd let me, sure.
I would let you do whatever you want. Okay. Are we far away from that or is that something around the corner?
I mean, I think the technology is probably in the beginning, you know, its beginning stages, but I don't see why in 5 or 10 years that something like that couldn't happen.
All right. So, I love that you come in here, talk about breaking sort of edge things like this contact lens.
Yep.
But maybe my favorite story of the week is the fact that Apple is going to get rid of their white plastic bags.
Yeah.
Because that's, and this will be the collision of cultures,
yeah.
Right? Because a lot of traditionalists, the Marshall Fields bag, you know, they didn't want to get rid of that.
Yep.
There's something iconic about the Apple white bag. So that's going to go.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually have a drawer full of them at home in my kitchen. I mean, every single white bag I've ever had, it's like, and it's amazing because
you mark on them what they were for?
Actually, I don't, and I really wish I did because I have a box through of like all of my other stuff that I have, like from phones and stuff.
Yeah.
And I would love to have done exactly that, but it's like any Apple product. When you get if you think about it, when you buy an iPhone or an iPad, you never want to throw away the box. Whether your reasoning is because it's cool or because, oh, I might need it someday, even though you know you won't.
You never
you
do.
You put
right.
it in a closet. Same thing, at least for me, with the bags. I save them. I feel guilty throwing them out. So expect to see them, I would assume, on eBay at some point. But,
so,
yeah, it's all about recycling. Had
you done it in the Kleinberg house, there might be one day when you would sort of go through the bag, through, like, going down memory lane and, like, oh, here was my first iPod.
I've actually done that, and it's funny that you say that because every year when it's the iPod anniversary, I find my original iPod. I still have it, and it's in perfect condition. It works. It charges. It plays music, and I listen to music on it for about an hour, and I just go back in time.
You know, I love you in so many ways. And so you are going to be one of those culture people who are going to you're going to miss the bag, aren't you?
I totally am. But the thing is, they're going to bring out this recyclable paper type bag.
Yeah, right.
Maybe it'll be amazing.
Oh, that's wishful thinking.
It
you're
really
going to be so disappointed.
I know.
Okay, here's another one.
Okay.
You were talking about Kickbeat bots.
Kickbeat Facebook to bots. Yes.
All right, let's say that again together. Kickbeat Facebook to bots.
Yes.
And what this tells me is this is even, you know, our communication now, even though it's much easier, much more universal, it's also more separated or withdrawn from each other, right?
That's true.
I can text a buddy of mine during the show.
Yep.
But we're not really talking. We're texting. It's less intimate.
True.
And now these bots sounds like it's going to de-intimatize text or Facebook conversations.
That's a good word. So, yeah. So if you think of a bot, almost like an app that's built into a messenger chat. So, for example, so Kik has a messenger platform. And everybody thought that Facebook would get this first, but they have it first. So basically, a bot would be like a weather bot. And it would be in our chat. So we're having a Facebook chat and we're just talking about anything. And we want to know if it's going to be raining at 6 o'clock in the evening. We just type like normal. Is it going to be raining tonight at 6 o'clock? And the Weather Channel bot chimes in and says, yes, the rain is expected to continue to 6 o'clock.
So the bot is monitoring our conversation in our text.
The bot isn't necessarily monitoring it. It's available to be there if it needs to help. It's almost like Siri is in a way, where you're looking something up online, you have the information you need, but you just want one more thing from Siri, and you say, hey, Siri, and you ask the question, and Siri pops in with the answer. This is like one level above that.
So is the bot going to interrupt us, or we're going to have to ask the bot?
You'd have to ask the bot, okay. Although it's possible. I mean, there are other uses of bots where it could just pop in and say, hey, I noticed you're talking about the weather. So in a way, yes, it could monitor if you told it to. I don't think that's the actual intention of what it is, but I'm sure that would be helpful to some people. Yeah.
Okay, so let's go to Twitter now. A couple of things about Twitter.
Okay.
The big news this week is that they won that bidding war to carry the NFL Thursday night football.
Yes.
Is that the biggest? I mean, it's big. It's a big deal because it's the first company of this sort.
Yes.
Not a TV network. I mean, remember when it was big, when it was not a broadcast channel, when the cable stations got it.
Oh yeah.
Now it's not even a TV station. It's a internet. It's a website.
It is, and a lot of other companies were bidding on it. Google, Facebook, Amazon, there were a lot of other places bidding on it. It was surprising to see Twitter win it.
So people who don't have Twitter can still see those games on TV?
No, they would have to actually sign up for Twitter, and they would actually have to watch the game streaming. Those particular games, at least according to this deal that we're reading, those particular games would be exclusive to Twitter.
Wow, that's bigger than I thought. I didn't realize that. I thought Twitter was going to be sort of an and also carry.
If Twitter I think that exists now. I think what sets this apart is this is exclusive content where you would actually have to say, if I want to watch this Thursday night football game, I actually have to sign up for or download Twitter. So for people who have not had no interest in doing that before, could this be a catalyst to get them to do that? Assuming Twitter really hopes so.
Okay, so I'm thinking that getting a group of guys around a TV or a cable screen to watch a game, that's going to be a lot harder on Twitter than it would be on cable TV.
I think it would be harder. Of course, you can beam your devices to a big screen TV,
sure.
So it's possible you'll be able to watch it there.
But that even further limits, that's even fewer people, really.
It would be fewer people, really, yes. But I think what Twitter is thinking is, okay, now you're watching the game, you're watching it with your buddies like you're talking about. Are you going to want to sit there and type and talk to people like you would do on Twitter,
right,
while this game is going on? I personally do not see myself watching football that way. I see it like you're talking about. A bunch of people over, we're having food, we're having drinks, we're watching the game. Where we're watching it is immaterial, although on a phone it's a lot smaller like you're talking about. But in this case, are you going to go that extra mile and use Twitter the way it's supposed to be used? I don't know.
So they're taking a communal event and creating it into, in a way, solitary event.
In a way.
That develops into a faux communal event. Over the Twitter sphere.
Yes, because they think you're going to want to have a conversation. They think you're going to want to tweet, did you see that touchdown?
Right.
You know, it's like if you were to take the college basketball game from the other day, did you see the three-pointer that ended that? Everyone's talking about that, yes, but are they talking about it in real time enough where you're making it part of the conversation?
Yeah, but I used to tell that to the guy sitting next to me, or my son.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to be tweeting it because my friends don't want to watch it on my iPad.
That's just it, and that's what Twitter is looking for. They're looking to totally transform. They've been doing this for a long time, but this is a new way of doing it. Totally transform the TV watching experience in a way where, yeah, you just watch it with millions of your closest friends.
Just not in person.
Exactly.
Scott Kleinberg, great to see you again.
Great to see you too, Steve.
Scott writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Okay, when we come back, we'll talk to Mike Lenz. He's the founder of Tip Yourself. You deserve a tip. I think you should tip yourself for coming in today.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
You're going to tip yourself for walking across and getting a cup of coffee.
That's a good idea.
Before you know it, you're going to be ahead by the end of the day.
Yeah, that's right.
Back after this.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you, Steve Alexander. A little something in the tip jar for you.
Thank you very
today.
Much.
But again, you have to put it there yourself. And Mike Lenz is here to explain that. He is the founder of Tip Yourself. Mike, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, explain this to me. It's sort of, it's like a doggy treat you give yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me.
So we explain it as a Tip Yourself's a mobile app for motivation, reward, and saving money. But more than the app, it's a community around just recognizing positivity, you know, acknowledging that moment of victory, whether it's big or small. So it could be, you know, got a job or achieved some goal, something really big moment.
Right.
Or more importantly, so small moments we tend to overlook, you know, took the stairs at work or, you know, just, hey, got through a tough day. You
right.
know, it's acknowledging it
okay,
a little bit.
So you, there's some community aspect to mm-hmm. this, right? Let's start with the solitary, the individual.
Sure.
So you set it up yourself
mm-hmm.
and you say, you know, if I, you know, have a salad for lunch today. Oh, I had salad for lunch today. I'm going to tip myself $5 for
correct.
That. And so then I go to the app and I tip myself $5.
Yep. So push a button, save money. So super simple. When you want to tip yourself $5 for whatever reason, that $5 is transferred out of your checking account into a secure tip jar that we hold on your behalf. And then when you want it back, you simply withdraw it back. No fees, no surprises.
And we should say the people holding that in that secure bank account is Wintrust.
Exactly. Yeah, it's very fitting. Wintrust has been a tremendous partner for us. All of the tip jar funds are held with Wintrust. They're an FDIC-insured institution. And, yeah, they've been great.
And they've been a great partner for me, too, I have to say. I didn't realize the connection until I was reading about it this morning. Okay, here's the thing, Mike. When I tip myself, yeah, it's still my money,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, I'm sort of taking money from Peter to pay Paul for mm-hmm. having that salad when if I just had a corn dog, I wouldn't have any more money.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'd be surprised. We get that. Some people either get it right away and they love it. Others say, well, I'm just putting money from my left pocket to the right.
I'm not getting any richer here, yeah.
But there's a lot. You'll be very surprised. Give it a shot and try it. You'll be very surprised at how motivating it is to see that savings, right? So if you skipped an impulse purchase at Target one day and you saved, you know, 15, 20 bucks, it's still in your checking account. You don't really see it. And so separating that out, seeing in your tip jar, seeing it tip up, is actually really powerful.
Okay, and tell me then about the community part of it, because other people can see when you reward yourself and cheer you on, or how does that work?
They can. And so our goal with the product is to kind of be the product for each individual and whatever they want out of Tip Yourself, right? It's Tip Yourself, it's your tip jar, it's your money. But we have a large portion of the community that likes to interact with each other. They want to say, hey, I took the stairs today. And someone else who's working on that same habit is like, hey, way to be, I did too.
So you're getting attaboys from people.
You can, right? And we also have a percentage of our community that's like, listen, I don't need to tell everybody that I flossed today, right? And so absolutely any tips, you can set them private or public. And so you can have a very one-on-one experience with just you and your habits and what you're trying to do. Or, you know, if you want to connect with a larger community, you can too.
All right. So you've launched, what, about 9 weeks ago?
Exactly, yeah.
And you had a really super big week in the past week.
We did.
And that's because iTunes puts you in one of their, what, favorite new apps?
Apple named us a best new app.
Apple, I should say, yeah, one of the best new apps.
Mm-hmm.
What does that do to a young business?
It humbles you.
What do you mean humbles?
It's very exciting, yeah. Very humbling. I mean, we're a two-person team here in Chicago. We have tremendous partners, right, on the financial side. You're dealing with money. You need to have a lot more experience in there. But it's just the two of us, and you're working hard on something, you're building something you're proud of, and we're getting some users, and we had quite a few come in, and then to have a company like Apple at their scale to reach out and say, hey, we dig what you're doing, we're into it, let us know how we can help.
So is there a moment of ecstasy and then panic?
Yeah. There's excitement very quickly followed by fear. If there's anybody out there listening from a technical standpoint, the servers started smoking a little bit, but we kept up.
That's a happy smoke.
It is.
Once you figure out how to put it out a little
exactly,
bit.
Exactly.
How do you make money?
So Tip Yourself currently makes money on the interest in the tip jars. So the custodial accounts held with Wintrust earn interest. That interest is revenue for the company.
Okay. The interest rates are very low.
They are. Absolutely. But as a company, with the internet and we need an app, you have the ability to really scale. And
right.
So for one individual, if you have $50 in your JP Morgan Chase or whatever account, your interest maybe isn't that much of $50. But for us at scale, it actually adds up.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. So if you, it's, it could, you can, you're not making money yet, are you?
No. I mean, well, we have revenue. It's just not not paying the bills.
Right, okay. Well, when you do, I think you should tip yourself.
Absolutely.
But there's also a movement or a chance to growth to where people can, when they tip themselves, actually put it in an investment account, right? Is that a long-term plan?
Correct. Absolutely. So we want to expand our financial services to our members and what is important to them. So very much just trusted common sense type approaches. The tip jar, as we explain to our members, is not a savings account. It is just like that. It's a jar you used to have on your desk, and that's what it's for. Maybe a little bit of money, fun money you spend at the end of the month or whatever that might be. If you're looking to save for retirement, save for something else, you know, it doesn't belong there. And
right.
So in the future, I think that's something that Tip Yourself can also offer.
What a nice way to move. I think that sounds like a great idea.
Thank you.
Mike Lenz, founder of Tip Yourself. People can find it at
TipYourself.com.
Great to see you. Good luck.
I really appreciate it. Thank you
so
much.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.